future lay out there in the bullpen.
The starters are out. Now it's time to head to the bullpen.
Squad, bullpen, now.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here are the producers of ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Go ahead, call the producers.
Quit it now!
It's off to Schmaler for the seventh game. The buzzer sounded. The light was on. It'll be reviewed.
I don't think he got that in time. Great effort by Derek White.
And didn't I say you have?
Oh, they're saying on the floor. They're counting it.
You have to protect the offensive rebounding.
Oh, he got rid of it.
He sure did.
That's a Celtic win, and we're going to game seven.
The Celtics are going to win. There's a game seven back in Boston.
Ruling on the floor is good basket. The play's under review.
White!
Do you believe what you just saw out there? Because I don't.
I don't, but we're here.
Just absolutely incredible. I was up here at the station last night. I worked the Houston Dynamo game and then just sat in the chair over there and watched the finish of the last 5 minutes of the game. Just that transports me right back to where I was. Just one of the most incredible finishes. I don't know how you guys felt. Oh, and maybe we should introduce ourselves. I am Brian McDonald. This is the Bullpen on ESPN Radio 97.5 and 92.5. Brian McDonald, Sean Mapes, RJ Saunders. No Josh this week. He'll hopefully be back with us next week. But, oh, my God. I mean, that was one of those games where, like, when it's over, and obviously the Astros have given us a lot of these moments over the last, you know, 6 years. But one of those games where it ends, like, I can't go to sleep. I just want to watch ESPN or NBA TV or listen to the radio. I just want to digest everything I can about the finish of that game.
Yeah, I think with around 2 minutes left, once Miami and Jimmy Butler especially started cutting into the Boston lead, it graduated to a rare air of games, especially when your team's not involved.
Yeah, I have no dog in. I like Jimmy Butler, but I have no dog in the fight.
But it's the rare situation where you're standing up and, like, 6 inches away from the television.
Oh, yeah, 100%.
like, for me, I'm just alone in my room, just standing there like, man, what's it like?
Yeah.
Boston needs a bucket right here.
RJ, how'd you feel about watching that game?
He's on vacation.
Oh, he's on vacation. All right. But, man, I'm watching that, and I'm just thinking, I mean, the whole time, I mean, Jimmy Butler is obviously just dreadful in the first three quarters of the game. Really, the entire, when you look at the shooting numbers for the entire Miami Heat team, Bam was bad shooting. Yeah. Gabe Vincent was bad shooting. I think Jimmy, even with his, you know, including what he did in late in the fourth quarter, he was only 5 of 21 for the entire game. But, you know, you always kind of felt like, I mean, even though the league got up to, I believe it was 9 with 3 minutes to go, it was just Jimmy Butler has proven time and time again that he's just that type of guy, that the game is never completely out of reach. I mean, did you guys have that feeling watching that game?
Absolutely not.
It was completely over?
I was rolling my eyes every time Reggie Miller said, you know, if you're the Miami Heat, you have to feel good only being down 6 considering Bam and Jimmy Butler have struggled so much. I'm like, I think at this point, like, you can kind of pencil them in for struggling for the rest of the game. Even Jimmy Butler, like, obviously,
yeah, he got it done from the free throw line. It wasn't even making shots.
It was all Jimmy Butler free throw grifting. Like, that's all it was. It was just, I mean, the last play.
Which, yeah, the three point foul he drew on Horford.
Awful shot. Unless you draw the foul.
RJ, I mean, as you're watching this game, did you have any faith that the Miami Heat were going to be able to get this game to where they took it?
Once the lead got to about, I think, 10 or 12, I really thought the game was over. It's like, well, see you in Boston. And then Jimmy Butler starts to wake up just a little bit. You get some timely shots from a couple of key players. But, I mean, Boston showed resiliency. It did come down to the final shot. I think this is going to be one of the all-time great games in NBA history, but I didn't foresee that coming, especially when Jimmy Butler got the 3 free throws. You thought, are they going to give him 2? Are they going to give him 3? Are going to OT? Is this going to be a win? And once they gave him 3 free throws, I'm like, the Miami Heat are going to the NBA Finals. And then we saw what happened after that. The script writers in the NBA, yeah. We saw how they finished it off.
Yeah, shout out to Arian Foster. I don't know who wrote the script for that game, but it was, I mean, just there's so many little moments you can point to. littered throughout the fourth quarter where any one of them goes the opposite way, you know, the result of this game changes. I mean, let's talk about Duncan Robinson missing probably two of the most, the easiest three-point shots he's ever going to have. He had one, both under 2 minutes. He had one that would have tied the game at 100. They were down 100 to 97. He misses. That was the one where he, like, took two dribbles, spun the ball like he was at the free throw line, and then still missed it.
Classic,
and then he
had too much time.
Yeah, he needed to shoot that in rhythm. And then he had another one in transition when they are down one and would have put them up by two that he bricked. And RJ, you mentioned the Horford foul. And if Joe Mazzulla doesn't challenge that, I mean, they added 0.9 of a second on. Obviously, Derek White gets the game winner in, believe, with 0.2 or 0.1 left. I mean, that changes everything.
Oh, that changes the whole complexity of the game. And the Miami Heat are probably, you know, in the locker room and in the press conference, it was never in doubt. We always had confidence. But how much more confidence are you supposed to have now if you're the Miami Heat? I really feel, to me,
you can't have any.
No, yeah.
You're dead.
To me, I completely feel this is like when, I believe it was the Clippers in the bubble when they faced against Denver. And Denver makes a great comeback. And I remember being asked by a couple guys at the station I used to work for, and they're like, so are the Clippers going to win in Game 7? I'm like, the Clippers gave them their best punch in Game 6, and Denver still won the game. This is over. Like, so I don't want to say that's going to be the same thing for Miami, but it definitely feels that way.
I mean, bring it back home to Houston. I mean, that series the Rockets had with the Clippers were that incredible Game 6 comeback where James Harden was on the bench the entire time. The Clippers had nothing left for Game 7. When you blow that in the way they did, I mean, you don't have anything left for Game 7.
Like I was telling my friend after the game, he was like, man, I don't think the Heat are going to emotionally recover in time for Game
7. Yeah, no bleep.
I was like, I don't think I'm going to emotionally recover in time. Like, I still, for like an hour after the game, like you're saying, like, watching all the highlights, watching the, you know, the TNT crew talk to all the guys, and you're just like, I can't believe no one just, Max Strus just didn't box out. We were saying before the show, like, if Max Strus just stood in the way.
He doesn't even have to block out. I mean, White had a complete unimpeded path to the basket. It was a straight line right for that tip-in. If you just stand in front of him, make him take one step
make
to either side,
yeah.
ball game. There's not enough time left.
I'm not even saying you have to be Dennis Rodman. Just literally just stand in his way. Just make him go around you.
Leading up to that point, RJ, I mean, obviously everyone's talking about the White tipping, but I mean, that Marcus Smart shot, that couldn't have been the plan for Boston. It, not only was it contested, Gabe Vincent was right on him, but there were still 2 seconds left when he let it go. I mean, that's the shot Boston comes up with?
Well, that's your third option there. I believe that they were saying, listen,
we're going to be drawn up for Tatum, right?
Going to go to Tatum. They doubled Tatum. So it's not like they're really guarding the inbound. It's really you're trying to, you know, not let Tatum get a good look at the basket. Then your second option is, of course, going to be Brown. And then you're saying, hey, Marcus Smart, just kind of, you know, peel over to the wing if one, option A and option B are down. And then you see also when you talk about if Max Strus would have boxed out, I don't know if the ball takes a lucky bounce. I mean, Jason Tatum was there. Nobody blocked him out as well. If it takes a bounce to the right, maybe he tips it in.
Horrible
boxing out work by the Miami Heat there. But no, I don't think that was the shot that they wanted. Although Marcus Smart almost hit the shot. It went in and out. So
when it bounced up, I was like, oh my God, this is gonna bounce in.
It wasn't until I saw the fifth replay, I was like, wow, what a wild shot that the season came down to Marcus Smart catching the ball with his back to the
yeah back. Yeah, exactly. It wasn't like he was open. It wasn't like it was a spot up or he's coming off a screen. Like he was catching like 180 in the air.
They're only
chucking
down
it
one
up
too. They didn't
right.
Yeah,
there's still two. I mean, I say there's 2 seconds like it's an infinity.
Well, there's three.
Well, I'm saying when he released it, there were still two seconds. I mean, they had to, he had time to make a dribble, make a pass, you know, something to get a better look than what he got up. But obviously, Derek White bails him out. I mean, if the Celtics pull this off, and obviously I think we all agree that they will, they'll do what no team has ever done in the NBA. No team has ever come back from 3-0 and won a postseason series. Three teams have forced a Game 7. 2003, the Blazers forced a Game 7 versus the Mavericks. That was a Rasheed Wallace. Was Scottie Pippen still on that team?
I think she was gone. Yeah, I think she was gone.
Okay.
I think he went back to Chicago, actually.
Yeah, maybe so. I know that was – I mean, he was obviously on the Rockets in 99, and then he went back to the Blazers. I couldn't remember if he was still there or not. But then you go back to 1994, the Nuggets forcing a Game 7 versus the Jazz back when Stockton Malone was were still on top. And then you have to go back for the first instance all the way to 1951 with the Knicks forcing a Game 7 versus a team that doesn't exist anymore, the Rochester Royals. I guess that was in New York?
I was a big Rochester Royals fan.
I've always looked at you as like, man, that guy identifies
bleeds.
As a Rochester.
Bleeds Rochester Red? I don't know.
Probably. I mean, Royals probably blue, right?
Yeah,
blue.
Yeah, I believe, I believe they're the Sacramento Kings now.
Oh, okay. Yeah, because, yeah, then I think they moved to Kansas City. Yeah. We're still the Royals, and then they moved to the Sacramento in the 80s. So
they bumped up to Kings, too.
They bumped from Royals to Kings. Yeah. Is that a bump up?
There's a lot of different Royals.
I mean, a king is a royal.
Yeah, but so is like a prince.
What is the royal hierarchy? Is king one?
I mean, they did make it very gendered, I would say.
Power rank the Royals. Go.
Queen, number one.
Okay. Look at how modern you are.
Thank you. Yeah. I paused.
You're so progressive.
I was waiting for applause.
You were waiting for the progressive applause. Yes.
King, princess, prince, duke.
Duke, okay. I love all the titles. Small sidebar. I love all the titles. The Duke of whatever. I couldn't even name what they are. But just they're so amazing sounding. I really want a Duke of Deer Park. I don't know if that would work the same way as what the Royals have over there.
The Duke of Deer Park.
The Duke of Deer. That sounds like a drug dealer, really. And that really loses. That sounds like I'm dealing meth. I don't think that has the same.
Definitely does.
Yeah, that doesn't sound like it has the same.
Hey, who's
prominence.
Your prom date? The Duke of Deer Park. You need to do better for yourself.
Yeah. Like, man, come on, man. Turn your life around, Brian. All right, so obviously, I mean, I think we all expect the Celtics to win at home in Game 7, meaning they face the Nuggets, who will have 8 days of extra rest heading into that NBA Finals. We'll talk about the NBA Finals on the other side and also get into some Rockets notes with lots of former Rockets, James Harden, Patrick Beverley talking about possibly coming back to the city of Houston. All of that is next with Sean Mapes, RJ Saunders. It's Brian McDonald here on the Bullpen, ESPN Radio 97.5 and 92.5.
ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Warrior sound!
Real. Let's go! Fun. Sports.
I'ma travel the globe. You keep the block hot. Driver. Open the door for me. My hair hurt. Find us. We playing hide and seek with the passports. What we at? Oh, the pilot gotta remind us. Yeah.
You're listening to The Bullpen on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
ESPN Radio 97.5, 92.5 is the Bullpen here on ESPN Radio. Sean Mapes, RJ Saunders, Brian McDonald. If you have any thoughts on Celtics Heat, we're going to get into the Astros, the Texans later. Rockets right here in a few moments. Give us a call on the HR&P listener line. Phone number is 713-780-3776, 713-780-ESPN. You can also reach us on Twitter. I'm at SackByBMAC. RJ is at RHasNoJ. And Sean had the most obvious name of all of us on Twitter, at Sean A. Mapes. I still think you should change it to the Sean the Dream after we found out last week that you you trained to be Akeem Olajuwon in your younger days. But
Sean the Cream.
Because you're white? Yeah. Is that where we're going
with that?
Akeem
Olajuwon.
Okay, I got to let that one go. So the NBA Finals, what day, what's the start date? Is it next
June
Tuesday?
1st. Thursday.
June 1st. Okay, Thursday. I mean, we're all expecting Celtics, Nuggets, which, you know, by the way, you know, side note, if we do get that, I mean, with all the, after all the upsets we've seen, obviously the Heat, an 8 seed, the RJ's Lakers, a 7 seed, if we end up with Nuggets in Celtics, that's pretty much what we all wanted, right? As far as, like, if you don't have a rooting interest in it, isn't that the matchup that most people would want?
Especially starting the conference finals, you'd be like, oh, the teams that aren't a 7 and 8 seed are going to make the finals. Yeah, that tracks. And obviously the way that Boston decided to go about winning their four games.
Yeah, it wasn't the most direct route.
No, it was...
to the 76ers,
truly,
down 3-0 to the
truly
Heat.
Truly the hardest road to beat the Heat. Again, if you just tell Heat fans, hey, you lost in 7 to the Boston Celtics in the conference finals.
Yeah.
Like, oh, we did that last year.
Yeah, exactly. I think they... I mean, they wouldn't take that. They obviously wouldn't just take that sight unseen, but they would feel like, okay.
You feel much better about it, and then you're like, all right, how'd it work game by game?
Yeah. So, RJ, I mean, I don't know how you feel about this, but the Nuggets are going to go in the series regardless of who comes out on top in the East with 8 extra days of rest. I mean, I think the Nuggets would probably already be – actually, no, not probably. I've already seen some of the Vegas projected lines. They're the favorite against either team, but how big of an advantage do you think that those 8 extra days of rest will be?
It's an advantage because of the rest, so, you know, you're able to – you know, watch both teams just a little bit more closely and see just kind of how their plays develop, how what player likes to go to which spot, how you're going to game plan for each team. However, 8 days off is 8 days off, and sometimes it does take you a while.
Mr. Russ.
Yes, to turn it on in game ones. We've seen that several times where a team, you'll say, oh, they got a week off because they swept the team, and then you see them struggle in the first half of game one or just lose game one outright because, you know, they haven't played in 8 days. So there is an advantage because of the rest, but there can also be a slight disadvantage because of the time that you haven't played.
Sean, I mean, I'm going to ask you the cliche question. What do you think it is for the Nuggets? Is it rest or rust? What if you had to guess?
I think it's rest.
Okay.
I mean,
I do too.
It's, yeah.
I mean, I don't like if you had a team that lived and died by the threes, like some of the like the Harden Rockets teams, I could see some rust element. But when you're talking about the Joker, he's got the post game.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's is rust. Rust. It's more rust proof than other offensive systems,
and,
I would say.
And just in general, the two man game between him and Murray. Like,
sure.
I feel
yeah.
like they could run those plays in their sleep. Like they could run the dribble handoffs and stuff in their sleep. So I think if you asked Mike Malone, like, hey, would you rather be playing a game 7 on Monday?
No, of course not.
And then turning around and playing in Denver, especially in Denver on Thursday because I think the Celtics
have a better
have
record.
Home court.
Yeah, Celtics okay. have a better record. Game one will be in Boston.
Maybe. No, I'm just kidding. Miami, for sure, if they have to go to Denver after a game 7.
Oh,
like,
my God. Yeah.
Just hand Denver the trophy at that point.
Yeah, I mean, I think we'd all pick the Nuggets. I mean, are we picking the Nuggets against either opponent? Is that where you guys are at?
Currently, that's where I'm at.
Yeah, I mean, I assume you would expect the Celtics to give them a better series after the way the Heat have faulted down the stretch. I mean, how many games do you think it goes?
I think it's probably like 5, maybe a 6 for like the team that's down, like never actually challenges
right.
for the series.
2-0, and then they win
or 3-1, and then they win one, and then they win on their home court.
Right.
Kind of thing. I would expect like a pretty easy 5 or 6. No
yeah, I think I'm with you on there, especially if it's the Heat. I think the Celtics could take them to 6, but I agree with you with your take that it wouldn't really feel like a competitive 6.
There's a lot of different kinds of 6-game series.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, So if the Heat finish off this epic choke, let's get into kind of where this choke would rank. I mean, I don't know if... It feels like it might be the greatest choke in NBA history. The only thing that gives me pause on that, RJ, is the fact that the Heat are an 8 seed, and you can argue, you know, they're overperforming where they should have been anyway. But if they do lose Game 7 tomorrow, is this the worst choke in NBA history?
I think it's...
It's the only team that obviously blow a 3-0 lead.
Yeah, but when you also blow a 3-1 lead to lose the finals, a la the Golden State Warriors, now that has to sting you a little bit. Although Golden State did bounce back relatively quickly the year after because they picked up Kevin Durant.
Please don't cough in the mic.
Sorry. This will be, one of the worst chokes. But I don't know if it's going to be number one, in my opinion. But no, it would definitely be top 3. Although there's probably a lot more in the NBA that may not be coming to mind right now, but yeah, that,
I mean, the Rockets have been on the positive side, a few of those, obviously the Suns blew a 3-1 lead against them. So, there's obviously been
Clippers that we mentioned before, 2015.
Yeah. Yeah. There's been, I don't remember exactly how many 3-1, series, blown leads there's been in the NBA, but there's actually been more than you would think. I
feel like there's
like,
been like 10 of them the last
yeah,
like 3 years.
Exactly. I mean,
it was rare up until
it was like when the Rockets did it. I think they were the first team to do it. I think they were the first team in 90 when they did it in 95 when they were down 3-1 to the
like
Suns. I think they were the
digit,
first one.
Like,
yeah, for sure. If they weren't the first, they were maybe like the second.
Third, yeah.
Yeah.
And then the Nuggets came back from 2 in 2020. two True. Different 3-1 leads that came back from.
Yeah, yeah. It feels like it happens way more than it used to. Most memorable chokes. I mean, I think obviously this is, you know, recency bias in the top of our head, but I was interested to see where you guys were, like the most memorable chokes for obviously a team in Houston or just your favorite team, and then where what your most memorable chokes were for teams outside of Houston. For me, I'll start with my local one. That had to be, and it's semi-recency bias because I didn't want to go back to the Oilers, you know, with the 31-3 blown lead because, I mean, I watched it, but I was like 9. So, you know, it wasn't – Sean wasn't even live. I realized as I said that I was 9, and that made me feel really old. So that I had that going for me. Yeah, I know, but I looked at you. I was like, oh, wait, you're so much younger than me.
Yeah, uh-huh, yeah. Sure thing, Grandpa.
from the Duke of Deer Park to Grandpa. Things are really going downhill for me. By the way, I think if I was the Duke of Deer Park, I would have to look and sound like Trevor from GTA 5. I think that's kind of the voice and look you need for that aesthetic. But my most memorable choke for like my Houston sports fandom, I think, would be the 2015 Astros. They're up 2-1 on the Royals, who went on to win the World Series that year. Not only were they up 2-1, they had Game 4 at home. Up 6-2, so up 4 runs going into the 8th inning. Governor Abbott, of all people, tweeted out, "Congratulations, Astros. I want to see an all Texas ALCS looking at you, Rangers." So he's already congratulating them with 6 outs to go, 6-2 lead in the Astros. Will Harris, looking at you, Will Harris, give up 5 runs in the 8th inning. They blow the game, lose Game 5 in Kansas City, lose the series, and the Royals go on to win the World Series. I mean, it's one of those moments where you kind of feel like when you lose to the champ, especially when you should have knocked out the champ, it's like, man, I mean, I don't think that 2015 Astros team, because, I mean, Alex Bregman wasn't even here. Obviously, Verlander and those guys weren't here. There was a lot of pieces from the 2017 that weren't there yet. But it does feel like when you should have beat the champ that you would have won the World Series.
Yeah, yeah, especially when it is – at a certain point, there is a little bit of, like, oh man, we're so close to like lucking our way into it.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. Like I wouldn't have felt like they were the best team in baseball, but they were there.
You just want the luck to keep right. running, like the Cinderella run aspect of it to run. I'll go another Houston sports one from the 2010s, the Rockets.
Specifically
Game 7 to me is like
the 27 missed three-pointers. Yeah.
That's where the choking really, really took place. That's when the asphyxiation really happened.
Yeah. Because like David Carradine themselves.
Losing Game 6 on the road without Chris Paul, that's like, all right, fine. They're up at halftime, which is
they were up in both games.
In the moment, I was like, I cannot believe that this is happening. And then they blew that one in Game 6. Again, on the road, you're already shorthanded. You weren't really. And then Game 7 at home, that's when you're like, all right, take care of this one. Let's take this home. And then, like you said, missing 27 straight threes. Specifically the way that they do it. Missing 27 straight threes is ridiculous.
Yeah.
If they lost by 9, too, which is also, I feel like gets forgotten when you go like, oh, yeah, they missed 27 straight threes. Oh, so they had no chance.
Yeah. So they lost by 30. Yeah. No, it was still a game. They led at halftime.
If they would have made like 5 of those 27, which is still a bad percentage.
Yeah, 5 of 27 is awful. RJ, what's your most memorable choke for one of your favorite teams?
Well, if we're going to talk about Houston, I'll say 2005 versus Dallas. You go up 2-0. In Dallas, Tracy McGrady, you know, had
one. I still have nightmares about that series.
Had a great game one performance, and then you lose 4 straight to the Mavs.
No, they didn't. I got to correct you there, only because of the way it ended. They didn't lose 4 straight, so they went up 2-0, winning the first two games in Dallas. They did get one more game because they went to a game 7 in Dallas, which the Rockets lost by 40.
Right,
they lost by 40 after being up 2-0 with 2 road wins in Dallas.
Yeah.
2-0, and they lose. They get to Game 7, and they lose by freaking 40.
Yeah, that one kind of hits me because you really thought that McGrady and Yao were starting to put it together. Maybe they were going to make a deep run, and then, you know.
Yeah, no, not tricks. Deep run at all. Yeah, Game 7. All right. There's so much more I want to get to on Celtics and Heat and the NBA Finals and chokes, but let's move on to the Rockets coming up here next to the bullpen. It's Sean Mapes, RJ Saunders, Brian McDonald, Patrick Beverley, James Harden. Could they come back to the Houston Rockets? Do we want them to come back to the Houston Rockets?
Speaking of chokes.
Speaking of chokes, yeah, like I mentioned earlier, James Harden wasn't even in that Game 6 against the Clippers way back. 713-780. No, that is that the phone number? I can't even. Yeah, 713-780-333. Gosh, man.
3776.
All right, start over. RJ, let's just start the whole segment over. 713-780-3776 is the HRMP listener line. Give us a call if you have any thoughts on the Celtics and Heat, the biggest chokes in NBA history or playoff history, and obviously we'll get into Patrick Beverley and James Harden, so if you have any thoughts on that as well. That's all next on the Bullpen, ESPN Radio, 97.5,
92.5. ESPN, 97.5.
You spend what you want, and you do what you want, I guess you got what you want. You're hitting the pole, and you give it your all.
Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's the Bullpen on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
ESPN Radio is the Bullpen with the producers here at 97.5 and 92.5. It's Sean Mapes at Sean A. Mapes, RJ Saunders at R Has No J, and myself, Brian McDonald, at Sack by BMAC. We spent the last couple segments talking about the Celtics Heat Series, the NBA Finals, the biggest chokes in sports history, which the Heat might find themselves at number one on the list here in a couple days, about 24 hours from now. I think
RJ touched on it, that them being the eighth seed is like...
It might be their get-out-of-jail-free card.
This is the first close game that the Heat lost this series. I think if they just kept getting, like, losing by 20.
Four straight blowouts.
Yeah, that also is in a weird way, like...
Does the Derek White tip-in save them a bit too? Like, okay, man, they should have had it.
Yeah. But it's the reason they won't win Game 7.
Right, 100%. I couldn't agree more. So if you have any thoughts on Celtics Heat, the biggest chokes, or what we're going to talk about here with Patrick Beverley and James Harden, give us a call on the HRMP listener line at 713-780-3776. Flawless execution of the phone line after I butchered it so badly going to break last segment. So Brian Windhorst, after saying that there was a massive appetite, and I did use massive appetite on purpose. I can say that because I'm also a fat person. But Brian Windhorst, after saying there was a massive appetite for giving James Harden the max, is now maybe indicating that James Harden, and this is courtesy of PTI talking to Tony Kornheiser, maybe the former Rockets star is using the Rockets to get a bigger deal from the 76ers.
The 76ers have not shown an appetite to pay Harden the max. That's why they asked him to take a pay cut last year. The Rockets have the cap space. Do they do it? It's been a very hard rumor out there in the NBA about Harden's intent to go back to Houston, and it makes you wonder if it's being sold a little bit too hard. And that's certainly something that people are considering. I guess we're going to wait and find out. But again, just like with Kyrie, the Sixers are not really motivated to pay him that max salary if they don't think anybody else is going to do it.
I tend to agree with Windhorst on this. I know he's kind of flip-flopping the course of 7 days, but I kind of do believe this side of it because it does feel like this narrative, which I think goes back to like December, like all the way back to December.
The Christmas Day game.
Yeah.
It was the craziest report ever.
It feels like this narrative is being really, really pushed hard. I mean, I've heard really nothing from the Rockets side of it. It's all seemingly coming from, we can't prove it one way or the other, but it's all seemingly coming from the Harden side of things that he's interested. And I know they're saying the Rockets are interested too, but it doesn't really feel like the reporting is as strong on that side. I mean, where's y'all's kind of gut feeling on this? Is Harden trying to use the Rockets for a payday with the Sixers? I mean, the reason I do believe this is, if you believe the report that he pushed Doc Rivers out, if you believe that report, then why push Doc Rivers out to then go to Houston?
Yeah,
it doesn't make any sense.
That is true. But I could also see the flip side of that, of maybe he didn't like actively push him out, but Daryl Morey knows that Harden wants him out. And so as a move to maybe get Harden back in the fold, they do that. But I think I've kind of been operating under the assumption, again, Christmas Day, 2022, the Sixers were about to play a game against, I don't know, probably the Knicks or Celtics or whoever. And Adrian Wojnarowski was on the Christmas Day set, the ESPN set, and just dropped that, you know, Harden still has a place in Houston, would love to go back.
It came so far out of left field,
out of
right?
nowhere. And then it's on Christmas Day it happens, and then it happens basically every three-ish weeks throughout the rest of the season.
It
and then
feels so planted.
And it's, yes, it's always like, oh, you know, after a big game or right before a big game.
People have stopped talking about this. Let's put it out there again.
Yeah, and so it is very, it does feel very calculated in that way. I would hope that it's a that it's a leverage play, I would say, on the Harden side. But, you know, I also have kind of resigned myself to, like, I don't know, Rockets make bad decisions. You know,
just
like,
it's in their DNA. Yeah, yeah, it's just who they are.
Your team can make a bad decision. You could think it's wrong, but they can still make the bad decision.
Yeah, that's always been one of my things that I live on in fantasy football is not falling into the fallacy of logical coaching.
Yeah.
Like, you don't want to assume, like, oh, well, this guy's really good. I think he's really good, so the coach is going to play him. No, he could still choose the guy that's not as talented and run him out there every single game. Exactly. RJ, where are you at? Do you think Harden is using the Rockets? Does he really want to be in Philadelphia?
I think there's a couple things, but my biggest thing is I think James Harden, I think there's a piece of him that wants to be the man again. It takes me back to the Miami Heat when they had Wade, Bosch, and LeBron, and there were rumblings that, you know, Dwayne Wade wouldn't be opposed to being the man again. You know, he's kind of given the mantle up to LeBron James, but there's still that piece of Dwayne Wade that believes that he could lead a team deep into the playoffs, maybe even the NBA Finals like he did in 2006. Do I feel James Harden feels that, listen, if I had my own team again, I could be a guy that could lead a championship roster? Maybe. I mean, you're not going to do that here in Houston, but there's also pieces I feel with Harden in Houston. He misses home, which Houston became his home for many, many years, and I think that there is a possibility there that he misses home. But you also heard with its comments, or that there's comments out there, that he wants to be on a team that'll let him be him. If there's a championship team out there that feels like James Harden could help them, they're not going to let him be him as far
as... Yeah, that feels like if he has to be him, then you're taking yourself out of the contenders, right?
Yeah, exactly. No contender is going to be a contender with James Harden.
Yeah, I mean, the Bucks wouldn't say, yeah, come and take the ball from Giannis.
Yeah, no one,
they're not going to say that. You know, the Nuggets wouldn't say, yeah, let's give Joker less touches. Harden, come on and jack up some threes.
And none of those teams have cap space, too.
Well, that's true. Yeah.
Only the bad teams have cap space.
True. Now, let's get into, let's say it does happen. And this projection was from Kelly Eco and his appearance on the Killer Bees. I believe it was Thursday. It might have been Friday, but I know I've been against Harden coming here. I think you guys were as well, or I can't remember exactly. Were you for it or against it, RJ?
I mean, I'm for it. I mean, I think it's the cool thing to do.
Well, the cool thing to do? Maybe it'll help with the Rockets trend on Twitter. But I do think this number, if this number is accurate, if Kelly Eco is right on his projection for what the Harden contract would look like if he did come to Houston, I think it might pull me around a little bit to... like, okay, you know, I'll give this a shot. So he's projecting a 2-year, $70 million contract for Harden. First off, 2 years. Okay, yeah, I'm on board with that. Harden's going to be 34 during next season. So, like, anything beyond 2 years would feel like a big risk, like we're venturing into Jose Abreu territory. But on top of that, I mean, $70 million, obviously, no duh, a lot of money, but when you look at some of the other contracts in the NBA, I mean, Harden made $33 million last year, so it's only a slight bump up. And $35 million this year for just a single season base salary would only rank 21st in the NBA. So it's not like it's the very top of the market. So, I mean, guys, Sean, if it's 2 years, $70 million, if that's the number, does that increase your willingness to try this out with Harden?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I would flip back onto like the pro side. If it's that deal or not James Harden, I'll take that deal with James Harden. Because like you said, $35 million sounds like a lot, but for a team that has like eight players that are all on rookie contracts or their rookie
contracts. Yeah, they're going to have like $60 million in salary cap space.
So like you're not spending that on anything better than 2 years of James Harden. You know, you're just
not
that,
right.
That is not going to, there's not going to be a more effective use of that space. Other than that, that will also make you better. That will make you, that will jump you up, like having him will jump you up. Because he is a good floor raiser. He's not raising the ceiling, like we're talking about with contenders not wanting to play Harden ball and not going to let him be him. is that he doesn't actually take you over the top, especially at this state of his career. He's not going to be a guy that takes you from losing the second round to making the finals. But he is going to have value as coming on to a team, say, that won 22 games last year, and pushing them up to a closer to like a 36 range, a 35 range, just making them play confident basketball. Having confidence at that position will be such a step up for them. And it, especially if you're not committing long-term to that, which is where it's actually going to get ugly, then yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, this, what'd you say? They won 22 games? Is that 22 games? Yeah, there's no way. I mean, especially if you get Harden in just a free agency signing, because he's got a player option with the 76ers. If you don't have to trade away an asset and you add Harden to this group, I mean, there's no way this team isn't winning something that would get them into, like, at least the play-in games.
Yeah, it'll start – the number they'll win will at least start with a three.
At least start with a three, absolutely. There's more on this with James Harden, also another former Rocket that's talked about coming back to Houston. We'll get into that when we get back here in the bullpen with Sean Mapes, Brian McDonald, RJ Saunders, and also we'll try to get into the Astros pretty quickly after that, who have been on a nice couple of game run against the lowly Oakland Single A's after that miserable series in Milwaukee. We'll get to all that and more on the bullpen. Sean Mapes, RJ Saunders, Brian McDonald. Don't go anywhere. We'll be back in 3 minutes.
Warning, warning. You're listening to ESPN 97.5.
Lined up the body. Who said they saw me? Crown on by Molly. Wrist on your gunny. They gon' judge your life for a couple likes on a double tap. Them sorry. They all get body.
You're back inside the bullpen with the producers of ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
ESPN Radio 97.5, 92.5 is the bullpen with the producers here at ESPN Radio. Sean Mapes, RJ Saunders, Brian McDonald. If you have any thoughts on what we've talked about so far, Celtics Heat, biggest chokes, James Harden coming back to Houston, Astros, Texans, anything, give us a call, 713-780-3776. That's the HRMP listener line again, 713-780-3776. So we left off last segment talking about what Kelly Eco said on the Killer Bees with a projected contract for James Harden of 2 years and $70 million. I think we're all on board with, if that's the deal, then sure. Yeah, I mean, I was against the Harden idea of bringing him back because my thought was, well, if a younger version of Harden, you know, can't get you to the NBA Finals with Chris Paul or Dwight Howard or Russell Westbrook, then why is an older Harden with a younger crew going to get you there? But as Sean pointed out in the last break, I mean, at least raises your floor. At least gets you to kind of being around a playoff team and get some experience. I mean, I think beyond winning, let's say, 35, 40 games, I think the experience of getting guys like Jabari and Jalen Green and Şengün, I think getting them experience of playing in more important games, possibly playoff games, is valuable in itself.
And just like playing real basketball.
Yeah,
like just playing,
come
like,
on, man.
Playing like a real 3 years. Playing like a real NBA team. Like just like stylistically, where it's like, hey, these games matter. We are actually trying to win all these games. That would just be nice. And you know, but I mean it's been said ad nauseum the last like 2 years. They need a point guard. James Harden,
yeah,
at the very
it's
least.
Not, yeah.
At the very least can just distribute the ball to these guys.
I mean, I guess let's stay here for with Harden for a second. I mean, I think if you get Harden, then obviously because kind of where I've wanted to go with the number four overall pick, and there's reports that the Raptors have called the Rockets about trading the number four overall pick. But one of my hopes, and we talked about this last week, was okay, if Scoot Henderson does fall and doesn't go number two, because the Charlotte Hornets believe they already have their point guard, then maybe the Rockets could trade up from four to three to get Scoot Henderson. But if you're getting James Harden, then that opens up other options for the number four. One of those options, I guess, would be Pascal Siakam. Is that who would probably be coming back if you traded the number four overall pick? Or is that who you would hope for for the Raptors?
No.
So you're not. I was looking at this before the show today.
There's that ESPN article with all the horrible trades in it.
No. Like no, just like you know how when you go to like the Twitter, not Twitter moments, but when you can go to and it'll show, I guess, for the things you look up the most, like just kind of like the top tweets for like the group, like the Astros, the Rockets, and that what always comes up recently for me when I look at like the Rockets stuff is just like fans projecting or tweeting out projected starting lineups, like. Tell me this wouldn't win. And a lot of it is obviously Jabari, Şengün, Jalen Green, plus Harden and Siakam. But Siakam, sorry. Yeah. So are you against that move then? I mean, assuming you get James Harden, I think that kind of takes you out of probably going for Scoot Henderson, trading up for Scoot Henderson, because now you got two point guards.
I mean, you can still take one of the Thompson twins. Also, the Scoot could also just like play behind Harden for 2 years. If we're also assuming the 2 year $70 million contract is what's going to be happening there. And so I don't know. I think that barring a trade for like an actual like all NBA style like guy in his mid to late 20s, like a Jalen Brown. Jalen Brown is like
the classic
example of like, this is what you trade the number for. Like Pascal Siakam and old James Harden and a whole bunch of 21-year-olds. Like, why are we trading our just to, you know, be the sixth seed maybe? Like I don't know. I don't see the like how the juice is worth that squeeze, as opposed to like, yeah, have Harden with the young guys and you're just adding another guy.
Where do you fall on that, RJ?
For me personally, I mean, I've kind of been on this boat that Siakam may be your guy. You will have to give up something though. And I think that Toronto
beyond the fourth overall pick.
Yeah. You would have to at least let go of, I would think they would either ask, you know, Jalen Green or Alperen Şengün, which one do you want to keep? And I feel like that would be the road in which they would go. I know Boston would go through that road now, especially with how Jalen Brown is playing. It looks like he may stay in Boston if they win in seven. But Siakam seems to be the guy that's out there with a Toronto team that's probably looking to rebuild, and a Toronto team that's really fallen from grace ever since they won the NBA Finals in 2019. So Pascal Siakam may be a guy that needs to be in a different place, and we may see a Siakam that everybody was saying, oh, his trajectory is kind of going up like this. And since, you know, that 2019 Finals, it's kind of just flatlined
after Kawhi Leonard left the team.
After Kawhi Leonard left the team.
And he had to be the best player on the team.
And he had to be the best player on the team. I mean, he's been able to show flashes, but I do believe that he also needs like another guy with him.
Well, there you go. I mean, we mentioned he fell off when Kawhi Leonard left. I mean, paired with James Harden. Do you think – I mean, obviously, 34-year-old James Harden is not Kawhi Leonard in 2019.
Wrong side of both these guys.
But
And trading the fourth pick and either Şengün or Green to do it.
I mean, Harden is a guy that's obviously had great assist numbers when he's been at the point. Do you not think he could get – Whatever the best version of Siakam is available.
But my question would be, what is the best? Like, what are...
Okay, so
what
you're
is,
saying...
For what? For what? Right. What is this all
so what,
this
the
for?
Best version of Siakam isn't worth it, is what
no,
you're saying.
The reason I'm for James Harden is because he can play a specific role that helps you evaluate the young players on the team because you're putting them in some sort of structure. Adding in Pascal Siakam and taking out one of those young players and the opportunity to take another young player with the fourth pick... Now we're just like, again, trying to be the sixth seed in the West.
I guess you're right. It feels like if they did that, and
you're making all in moves, but not going anywhere
close to actually where you want to go. It does feel like, I think you're right. And if RJ's right, if it would cost you the fourth overall pick plus one of these young three, then I'd be out. Like if they say it's like it's going to take like I would be in. Or I would at least listen to it if it was, let's say the fourth overall pick plus a future pick, like a Brooklyn pick. I would listen to that conversation. But if it's going to take the number four overall plus Şengün or plus Jalen Green, then I'm out.
And or like, you know, the four pick, one of the Boston – or one of the Brooklyn picks, and then, like, K.J. Martin or Tari Eason or something.
Yeah.
And that, I'm like, oh. Again.
Yeah, because it does feel like, specifically, if you gave up – You know, like you pointed out, Sean, two young players, the player like Şengün or Jalen Green that is actually in the NBA going to Toronto in this deal, and you're taking out a young player from this roster that you would have gotten with the fourth overall pick, you're kind of putting like yourself in like, okay, we have to win now. This is our window. Like, this is our window, and what would the ceiling even be with that window?
Yeah,
like you said, 16?
And you have a whole bunch of guys who have literally never played real basketball.
Right. Like, you couldn't even trust that they would be able to do the most with that opportunity to begin with.
Another reason, like I said, you're getting both Harden and Pascal on the wrong side of things is Pascal Siakam is 29 and has led the NBA in minutes the last two games.
Or 2 years.
Last 2 years. Yeah. So
I didn't even realize that he. I didn't realize.
Toronto was playing.
They're running the running the
same thing.
Tread off his tires.
Same with all those guys. All the Toronto guys have played so many more minutes than you.
Okay, I didn't even realize that. Yeah, if the price, I'm on your side now, Sean. If the price is number four plus one of the young core guys, then I would be out on Pascal Siakam. But I mean, if that's the case, if we're out on moving the number four overall pick for a guy like Siakam, it sounds like you would still be open to the idea of trading up for Scoot Henderson. But if those aren't the options, I mean, RJ, what would you want to do with the number four? Let's say you get James Harden. You don't want to trade for Siakam. Maybe you don't want to trade up for Scoot Henderson. Are you just sticking and picking at four and taking one of the Thompson twins, or what is your plan for number four at that point?
I feel like it's Amen Thompson or Bus. I know I brought up last week like a Amani Bates type guy because
you're not picking
him
at four, RJ.
Amen Thompson?
No. Amani Bates.
I get it. I mean, I don't think he's going to be there at four. I just, you know, he was a lottery.
He'll definitely be there.
He'll be there at four. I mean, but this guy was, you know, almost a surefire lottery pick just a couple years ago. That's why I brought him up. However, I mean, there could be a world where Scoot Henderson actually falls to four. I feel like there could be. I mean,
doesn't it feel like whatever Portland does with the number three overall pick will be where Scoot Henderson goes? Like if they trade the third overall pick to get whoever to add a Dame Lillard to take another shot of it, isn't the team that trades up to three just taking Scoot Henderson?
Yeah, that would be the.
My point being is I think you have to trade up to three to get him.
Yeah,
because it does feel like if the Blazers trade the third overall pick for, I don't know, Siakam or whoever it happens to be, whoever's trading up to number three is just taking Scoot Henderson.
Unless they trade for like, I don't know, like John Collins and like some of the Atlanta stuff, and Atlanta already has Murray and
Hashtag Atlanta stuff.
Yeah, players.
Yeah,
sorry to dehumanize them so much. But if Atlanta already has Trae Young and DeJounte Murray, and they're trading for the fourth pick, maybe they pick one of the forwards instead.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't like the idea, and it seems like you guys are more open to it than I am, but I don't like the idea of just sticking at four and picking one of the Thompson twins. I mean, Amen Thompson or whoever.
Cam Whitmore? Jairus Walker?
I mean, yeah. I mean, but doesn't it – look, I know – and I'm in agreement that you add Harden to, you know, Jabari and Şengün and Jalen Green, you're not talking about, okay, this team's now a title contender. But it does feel like, I mean, if you're going to take at least some kind of shot of it with Harden on a two-year deal, whoever you draft there at number four, because you're outside of that top tier, isn't going to be ready in those two years to even do anything. I hate to say it feels like a wasted pick, but for the – 2 year window with Harden, like, what would you even expect from a guy that picked a four?
That's where we fall back into the what move can you realistically make to make a run with Harden? This team is not on the James Harden timeline.
Yeah,
they all their players are a decade younger than them.
Signing Harden and trading for Jalen Green completely crazy? Is that completely just not even possible?
No, it's.
I mean, you have the salary cap for it. If you're able to get Harden as a free agent, then you can use Jalen Green to trade for Jalen Brown.
Yeah, Jalen Brown is a type of player where I would be comfortable, trading Jalen Green for Jalen Brown, partly because how confusing it would be if they were both on the same team.
God, that would be awesome.
So, yeah.
Brown to Green. Green back to Brown.
I think that would be the move because Jalen Brown can also bridge the timelines between – he is ready to win now, as we're seeing in the Eastern Conference Finals. He's ready to be on the James Harden timeline. And he's also only either 26 or 27. And so he will be at least in the same age. He's actually almost perfectly in the middle of the age of James Harden and all the 21-year-olds on the roster.
Yeah, he's right in the middle. RJ, what would you be willing to give up to get Jalen Brown? I mean, I assume all the top three are on the table, but who would you be willing to offer Boston?
Is it
Jalen Green? Is that what the piece you would try to give them plus number four?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like that's what you would have to do in order to get it done.
Yeah, probably plus a Brooklyn pick.
I mean, if not that, they'll probably ask for Alperen Şengün. I mean, unless there's guys around the NBA, which you've heard talks, I mean, that they feel that Alperen could be a mini Jokic. Not saying he can lead your team to the NBA Finals, but he
just win one MVP.
I mean, he has that skill set for you. So, I mean, it's definitely an interesting thing. I just don't see – Jaylen Brown walking away from that Supermax?
Not even to reunite with his former coach?
No, I just don't see it. And he needs his own situation. I just don't know if he's saying, yes, I want a team with James Harden, who says he wants his own team, but I'm coming here because I want that to be my own team. It says, what Harden are you getting, and then what Jaylen Brown are you getting, and what are you telling Jaylen? Are you telling Jaylen Brown this is his team, or are you telling James Harden sign on the dotted line and this is your team? So there's a lot of confusion there as far as those two guys go. So, I mean, you know, I think the reason why the Siakam thing works is because you're saying, Siakam, listen, you're going to be the second best guy on the team. We're lying to this old guy saying he's the best guy on this team.
That's the funniest part, is that James Harden should not be the best player on your team.
Yeah, so we're lying to him just to have him sign pen to paper. So we're quote-unquote relevant in the NBA again, but this guy, Pascal Siakam, is not going to be like, hey, you guys said
Siakam,
this was my team.
Try to make it his team, but RJ, I think you're right. I mean, as fun as that would be, if you got Brown and Harden on the team, you're probably going to wind up having the same problem that Harden's had getting along with all his co-stars. I mean, Chris Paul, Dwight Howard, Russell Westbrook, Kyrie Irving. I mean,
Westbrook? I
said Westbrook, didn't I?
I thought you said Westbrook.
Oh,
I was going to call you out on that. Tell RJ to dump that.
All right, we got to get out. We are definitely over. There's actually, believe it or not, still a little more I want to talk about with the Rockets, but we'll definitely get into the Astros next segment as well, with some crazy comments by Astros bench coach Joe Espada about struggling Jose Abreu. All that more when the bullpen with Sean Mapes, RJ Saunders, and Brian McDonald returns on ESPN Radio 97.5 and 92.5.
This is ESPN 97.5.